Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, listeners. I'm your host, Amara, and this is Black Girl Gone, a true crime podcast. On this episode of Black Girl Gone, I tell the story of Veronica Jefferson, a 23-year-old woman who was murdered in Arlington, Virginia, on May 10th, 1988. On the night she was last seen, Veronica stopped at a local market to pick up a few items before heading back to her apartment. But Veronica never made it back home. Several hours after she was last seen at that store, Veronica's body was found behind a local elementary school. She had been raped and then fatally shot. Her clothes were neatly folded next to her body. Initially, investigators believed that Veronica knew her killer. But as their investigation continued, they began to realize that this case was not that simple, and it would take 17 years before her killer would be found and brought to justice for her brutal murder. This is Veronica's story. It took 17 years for the brutal murder of Veronica Jefferson to be solved. For years, the identity of her killer remained a mystery, but thanks to advancement in DNA over the years, investigators were able to find the person responsible for her murder and bring him to justice, proving once again that if the proper resources are invested in a case, even the ones that are cold can be solved. Veronica Lynn Jefferson, called Tina by her family and friends, was born on November 1st, 1964 in Youngstown, Ohio, but grew up in Lawton, Oklahoma. She was a graduate of Eisenhower High School, and she graduated in 1981. After high school, she attended Oklahoma State University. At OSU, Veronica was a member of the National Honor Society. She also became a member of Delta Sigma Theta sorority and eventually became president of her chapter. During her senior year of college, Veronica was recruited by the CIA to be an accountant, and so after graduating, she moved to the Washington, D.C. area to begin work for the CIA. In the spring of 1988, Veronica was 23 years old and living in Arlington, Virginia, with her two roommates. She was doing well at work and was even on track to receive a promotion. Not much is known about Veronica's personal life, but according to reporting done by the Washington Post, around this time, she was dating a young man who was in medical school. By 1988, Veronica had been living in Virginia for 2 years, and although things were going well at work, her parents said that she had been debating whether or not she wanted to come back to Lawton because she was homesick. Her parents told the Washington Post that they encouraged their daughter to stay in Virginia. There weren't a lot of opportunities in their small town, and her parents believed that she was better off where she was. Veronica was planning to come back home that Memorial Day, and so they all planned to talk about her desire to move once she was home and they were all together. But Veronica never made it back home to have that discussion, because a couple of weeks before she was supposed to return home, Veronica was murdered. On the evening of May 10th, 1988, Veronica went to Maryland to go visit a cousin of hers. After spending a few hours with her cousin, Veronica got in her red Camaro to head back to her apartment in Arlington. Before heading in the house, she decided to stop by a local grocery store to pick up some snacks. Shortly after 9 p.m., Veronica parked her car in front of the store and entered the Giant grocery store, located a few blocks from her apartment on Columbia Pike. She purchased a few items, including microwave popcorn, some ice cream, bananas, and shampoo. According to the Washington Post, the receipt was timestamped for 9:30 p.m. Now, when Veronica left that store, it would be the last time that she was seen alive. The assumption is that Veronica got in her car to head back to her apartment, but before she could get there, something happened and she never made it back home. In the early morning hours of May 11th, 1988, two men were out riding their motorcycles around Arlington when they made a gruesome discovery. At around 2:30 a.m., the two men were riding behind McKinley Elementary School when they found a woman dead behind the school. She was naked and her bloody clothes were folded nearby. The woman had been shot at point-blank range, but there was no ID on or around the body, and so when police arrived at the scene after being called by the motorcyclist, they had no idea who that person was that they had just found. In order to identify the victim, the police turned to the local news, who reported the body of a woman being found behind the local school. And that morning that the report aired, Veronica's roommates, who had been concerned when she hadn't come home the night before, happened to be watching the news that morning. And when they saw the story, they immediately called police. Veronica had not only never returned from her cousin's house, she had also not shown up for work at the CIA that morning. And so they were terrified that the woman found was Veronica. When her roommate spoke to police, they asked for someone to come down to the station to look at pictures of the victim to see if they could get a positive ID. A neighbor of the woman, who happened to be a police officer, volunteered to view the pictures to see if it was Veronica. And when the neighbor went to the station, he was able to confirm the devastating news. The body they found was Veronica. The news that Veronica had been murdered was shocking. No one could imagine how or why this would happen to her. Veronica was unproblematic. She lived a normal, quiet life. It made no sense that someone would want to brutally murder her this way. At the crime scene, investigators began trying to unravel the mystery of this murder. Veronica had been found nude, and so sexual assault being the motive was considered early on by detectives. But the fact that her clothes had been neatly folded made them suspicious that the sex may have been consensual. I mean, it was unusual for an attacker to fold the clothes of their victim, and so investigators were not sure if this was a consensual sex gone wrong or something else. Detectives working the scene spoke to neighbors near the school to see if they recalled hearing anything strange that night. And several people in the area said that around 10:45, they heard what sounded like a woman screaming and then a gunshot, but no one called the police, and no one actually saw anything. Later that afternoon, after Veronica's body was found, her Camaro was located by a patrol officer. The car was found in the parking lot of the Giant grocery store, the one Veronica had been at the night before. The car was parked along the side of the building, and the vehicle was unlocked, and there were no keys in or around it. Inside the car, they found Veronica's designer purse, and inside it was her wallet that contained cash and credit cards. Also inside the car were the groceries Veronica had purchased. The ice cream melted in the bag. There were no signs of a struggle inside the car. However, investigators did find a box cutter that they believe belonged to the killer. The car had also been wiped clean. There were no fingerprints found inside or outside. With all of her belongings, including her wallet and purse, being located, the idea that the motive for this murder was robbery was quickly ruled out. While initially investigators believe Veronica's murder happened after a consensual sexual encounter, after speaking to her family and friends, they realized that it was unlikely Veronica knew her killer. Her parents insisted that Veronica, who was dating someone at the time, was not the kind of woman that would lay down in the dirt and have sex with some man behind a school. And regardless of whether the sex was consensual, the shooting was not. And so investigators had a cold-blooded killer out there somewhere, and they needed to find them as soon as possible. After discovering Veronica's car in the giant parking lot, detectives began to focus their attention on the employees at the supermarket. The fact that she had been there the night before shopping and then her car was found back there after her murder made investigators suspect that perhaps the killer worked at the store. They also believed that the box cutter found in the vehicle pointed to the possibility of a store employee being involved. With the help of the FBI, the Arlington police began questioning the 186 employees that worked at the store. They collected DNA and blood samples from several of them also. Investigators also interviewed Veronica's family, friends, neighbors, and the young man that she was dating, who was ultimately cleared of any involvement. Investigators interviewed hundreds of people as part of their initial investigation, and eventually, their search narrowed down to 6 potential suspects. But when their blood was tested, it did not match the DNA found at the crime scene, and they were all ultimately cleared. Investigators had hit a dead end. After the DNA failed to match any of their suspects, they believed that there was still a possibility that Veronica had known her killer, but they were unable to find any evidence to point to a viable suspect. 4 days after Veronica was murdered, investigators got a potential break in the case when a police officer named Douglas Taylor contacted investigators after seeing a flyer with Veronica's picture and car. Douglas told detectives that he believed he saw Veronica's Camaro on the night of the murder at around 9:45 p.m., an hour before neighbors believed they heard that gunshot near the school, and 15 minutes after the timestamp on Veronica's receipt. Douglas said that he was on his way to work when he spotted the car driving near Columbia Pike. He said as it turned the corner, it hit the curb rather hard, which prompted him to follow behind it. He said the car was driving slow and swerving, and he could see a man in the driver's seat leaned over talking to a woman in the passenger seat. The license plate on the vehicle read Miss VLJ, same as Veronica's car. After following the car for a few minutes, it pulled over and Douglas pulled behind it. He said that a young woman got out of the car and then went around to the driver's side where she leaned in the window talking to the driver. Douglas said that nothing seemed out of the ordinary about their interaction. He did suspect that this was a DUI, but Douglas was off duty and in his personal vehicle, and so there was nothing much he could do. He said he headed on to work, and after that, he didn't think much else about the car until he saw the flyer. When Douglas spoke to investigators, the story he told about what he saw that night only added to the mystery of this murder. If he had in fact seen Veronica and her car that night, then who was she with and why was someone driving her car? In the weeks following Veronica's murder, investigators were confident that they would solve this crime. But as the weeks turned to months, leads began to dry up and people close to Veronica began to wonder if her killer would ever be found. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in the day? Would you go for a run, maybe take a nap? A lot of us spend our lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. It's helpful when you need to learn positive coping skills or how to set boundaries, and it can empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major traumas. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited for your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/girlgone today to get 10% off your first month. That's better. HELP.com/girlgone. On May 11th, 1988, the body of 23-year-old Veronica Jefferson was found behind an elementary school in Arlington, Virginia. She had been shot to death, and now the investigators needed to find the person responsible and bring them to justice. After Veronica's body was found, detectives had interviewed hundreds of people and, at one point, narrowed down their suspect list to 6 people, but all of those people were cleared by DNA, and so investigators were back at square one, trying to find a suspect and a motive. Not long after the murders, rumors began to swirl that perhaps Veronica's work for the CIA had something to do with her death. Maybe she had uncovered something while doing the accounting work for the agency and someone was trying to silence her. But investigators explored that possibility and found nothing to suggest that her murder had anything to do with her job. In the months following the murder, investigators continued to pursue leads connected to this case, but they were finding very little information and no evidence that would lead them to a suspect. They believed that Veronica was abducted shortly after leaving the grocery store, but investigators didn't know where that abduction took place. However, the fact that her killer drove her car back to the parking lot of the store led them to believe that she encountered her killer either inside or outside the store that night. A year after the murder, a local TV news station ran a story on the anniversary in an attempt to reignite tips about the murder. After the story aired, detectives were contacted by an elderly couple that remembered seeing Veronica at the Giant the night of her murder, a year before. They said that a black man they described as attractive was flirting with Veronica at the deli counter that night. They said they saw him again outside the store with Veronica, talking to her near her car. The woman said that Veronica was smiling and laughing, but she seemed anxious, and it gave the woman an uneasy feeling. The couple sat down with the sketch artist, and they developed a composite of the man that the couple saw that night. But when Douglas, the officer who saw the Camaro the night of the murder, saw the sketch, he said it didn't look like the person that he saw that night. Now, although Douglas cannot really remember the exact features of the man he saw that night, the person depicted in the sketch just didn't seem right. In November 1989, the TV show Unsolved Mysteries aired an episode that featured Veronica's murder. During the episode, they showed the sketch. After the show aired, investigators received 250 calls with tips and leads, but none of those calls led to anything. In the years that followed, investigators continued to pursue leads, but eventually they all dried up and the case went cold. As the years went by, the investigators that worked the case originally tried to keep it alive, but they knew that they were going to need something significant in order to break this case open and reignite the investigation. After nearly a decade had gone by, Veronica's murder remained unsolved. For those who knew and loved her, her murder haunted them, and the fact that no one had been held accountable only added to their pain. Veronica's case sat on a shelf for years until the Arlington police formed a cold case unit. With advancements in technology at the time, investigators assigned to the unit's first order of business was to send DNA from Veronica's murder to the state crime lab for testing. They hoped that their killer had committed another crime and that their DNA was in the state database. In August 2000, the detectives from the cold case unit in Arlington received a call from the state crime lab. There was a match, but not to a suspect, to another murder. Actually, 2 other murders. 7 months after Veronica was murdered, in December 1988, Rachel Raver and her boyfriend Warren Fuller were abducted after leaving a restaurant in D.C. At the time, they were both students at George Washington University. They were taken to a field where Rachel was raped before they were both shot to death. It was a case that baffled detectives and had been unsolved for over 10 years, just like Veronica's murder. At the time, there was no reason to believe that the murders were connected. They had taken place in separate counties. One involved a couple of white college students, the other a young Black woman. There was no reason to believe that these murders, 7 months apart, in different counties with seemingly different MOs, were connected. But now, with the DNA results back, it confirmed that whoever killed Veronica had also murdered Rachel and Warren. Unfortunately, the DNA did not match a suspect. And so, although investigators now knew they were dealing with a potential serial killer, it was disturbing not to know who that person was. In 2005, 5 years after the DNA from Veronica's murder was connected to two others from Fairfax County, Congress passed a law requiring all convicted criminals to have their DNA entered into a national database. As a result, 17 years after Veronica's murder, detectives got a match for the DNA left behind by her killer. Hundreds of miles away in San Quentin State Prison in California, a man named Alfredo Prieto was sitting on death row for the rape and murder of a 15-year-old girl in 1990. When the DNA was matched, it came back to Prieto, and investigators learned that he had been living in Arlington, Virginia in 1988 when these murders occurred. In September 2005, detectives went to San Quentin to collect DNA from Prieto, which he agreed to give. The DNA was tested directly against the samples, and it was confirmed to be a match. Alfredo Prieto was the person who murdered Veronica. When his DNA was entered into the national database, Prieto's DNA was matched to a total of 8 unsolved homicides that took place between 1988 and 1990. Aside from the murders of Veronica Jefferson, Rachel Raver, and Warren Fuller, Prieto was linked to the 1989 murder of a man named Manuel Cermeno in Prince William County. He was also linked to the 1990 rape and murder of a 19-year-old woman and her 21-year-old fiancé in California. A month later, he killed a woman behind a grocery store before abducting and murdering her husband. Alfredo Prieto was a serial killer, and after being linked to 4 murders in Virginia, the Fairfax district attorney had Prieto extradited back to Virginia, where he would face charges for the multiple murders he was linked to committing. In March 2007, Prieto went on trial for the murder of Veronica Jefferson and Rachel Raver. And after a brief trial, he was found guilty and given a second death sentence. After a series of failed appeals, Prieto's sentence was ultimately upheld. And on October 1st, 2015, the state of Virginia executed Alfredo Prieto. 27 years after the brutal murder of Veronica Jefferson, her family received some semblance of justice. Even after all these years, there are still many unanswered questions about why Alfredo Prieto decided to kill Veronica that May 9th in 1988. Did he simply watch her leave the store and then randomly decide to abduct her, rape her, and then murder her? As crazy as that sounds, it seems like that's exactly what happened. Prieto was a serial killer. In just 2 short years, he murdered multiple people he had no connection to. Men and women, young and old. It's scary to think that something like this could happen to a young woman whose life was just starting. It's heartbreaking to know that a simple evening at a local store ended in a brutal rape and murder. It took 17 years for Veronica's killer to be identified, but stories like this give hope to other families that justice sometimes takes a long time, but it's always possible. Veronica's senseless murder at the hands of a brutal serial killer reminds us of the cruel and evil world we often find ourselves living in. But Veronica was more than her brutal murder. And although her story isn't one that many people know, it's a story that deserves to be told. Because Veronica deserves to be remembered. May Veronica Jefferson rest in peace.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and Threads.